Welcome into First Things First. I'm Sarah Kustak alongside Chris Broussard and Doug Gottlieb. We, of course, are filling in for Jenna, Nick, and Chris. Good morning. How are we doing Thursday?
Great. Kind of bummed out.
Tough night. Tough
right?
night.
It was. Like, we're ball, night. We're all ball people, right? We
right.
love nothing like a full gym. The President of the United States, 44 there in
right.
attendance, and...
Yeah, the ex-president.
Like 30. You're always a president.
I feel like
you're always, the,
always
president.
The president.
Anyone
yes.
who is okay. watching
you're
this show
the
knows exactly
you're
what you're
yes.
talking about. But if not, we start with the top story, Zion Williamson and Duke, and Zion suffering a mild knee sprain after blowing out his shoe less than a minute into last night's huge rivalry game against UNC. The Blue Devils never recovered. UNC rolled to an 88-72 win at Cameron Indoor. Zion will be reevaluated today. But, Doug, does last night show that Duke can't win a title without their star?
Oh, there's no question they can't. I mean, this is a top-heavy team. No, cannot. Without him or without any one of their big three. I mean, they only have 3.5 guys that can score. And I thought R.J. Barrett showed some of his flaws as a shooter, and he gets a little bit selfish. Plus, there's not a lot to pass to.
Yeah.
You know, Trey Jones can't really score. It's Tyus Jones' brother who was the point guard last time they won a national title. And as good as Cam Reddish is, like, he's just kind of a shooter. This team is built for that big 3.5, if you will. By the way, I noticed you almost said Blue Demons. As a former Blue Demon, you did kind of throw it in there.
Alum.
Right? You
it
just want to throw it in there.
Blue Demons.
But look, the whole deal is how we're all bummed out because we want to see Zion, against North Carolina. And you just want to see more of this kid. And we have an equipment malfunction with Nike where I've never seen that before. I've blown out shoes before. I blew out a shoe, like a Nike shoe, in the NCAA tournament. Probably half as bad as that. But the entire sole came off of it.
But you still,
no, this
the fact that you blew out a shoe, so obviously other people have done that as well.
Wait, where did your shoe come apart?
On the side.
So it was a side panel?
It was a side, and the side panel came out similarly like that.
You didn't get injured.
No, I mean, it was fortunate. It was the old GP2 shoe, the glove shoe. Those are cool, Nikes. Second round of the NCAA tournament, blew it out and had to wear some shoes that somebody else is one of the walk-on shoes. Like, come on, dude, you're not going to use yours. Give me your shoes. But that was scary, right?
It was very scary
because
and the way he kind of split like he did. Right now, obviously, they're calling it a mild sprain. Hopefully, that is the case. They're going to get a fuller diagnosis today. To answer your question, look, I had them, and I know who knows who's going to win the tournament. I had them as a favorite going in with Zion. Now I don't have them as a favorite, obviously, but I still give them a shot. I think you've got two of the top, guys that are supposed to be top 5 picks, top 6 picks in the draft. You've got a great coach, and obviously Coach Krzyzewski. So I give them a chance. I think they still are a top 10 team in the country, even without Zion Williamson.
No.
You got R.J. Barrett still a great player.
They are, but there's 5 guys on the basketball field. They have 3 guys that literally
are
can't score.
Other guys can step up.
No, but like,
last night, look.
They lost to Syracuse.
Let me. It's last night means nothing.
Right.
Whenever you have an injury like that, to the mental and emotional distress that a team goes through.
You're accurate.
We saw it last year with Boston.
Yeah. Yes.
Boston Celtics, Gordon Hayward goes down. They lose their next 2 games, or including that one, and then run off 16 straight wins. So, again, I'm not saying they're a favorite. I do still think they're a top 10 team because you have major talent. You know how important guards are in the tournament, and you've got some good ones there. And R.J. Barrett is the type of guy that can win you games, I think, by himself. And I think some of those other guys while obviously they can't replace Zion, but they can step up their games and do more now that they'll have more of an opportunity.
Jack White's missed 25 straight 3-point shots, and he's been wide open. You know, Delorier
can't. So he's due.
Well, listen, this is what we experienced right. last night is the curse of the one and done at a place like Duke. They cannot fill out their entire roster with the types of players. They used to have depth, but take a Jordan Tucker. So Jordan Tucker starts come off the bench some from Butler. He was there for 2 games last year and then was like, I'm out. Why? Because he knew these guys were coming and he doesn't want to come off the bench for his first couple years worrying they're going to keep bringing in guys. So the disparity between the top 3.5, the top 4 freshmen, and everybody else.
I get that, because the top 3.5,
it is a cliff.
Okay, but top 5 NBA picks.
I understand.
That would be true on virtually any team.
They've suffered 3 losses. Well, outside of the, they lost to Gonzaga, right, early in the year. But when they lost, you know, they almost lost to Florida State. Should have lost to Florida State. That was when Zion got poked in the eye. And then they lost at home to Syracuse. That's when they didn't have two of their starters, right? And then they lost last night. And I would agree that last night, in the context of the game, it was completely deflating. Everybody who likes, you don't even have to like basketball. You click it on, you want to watch the kid play. You want to watch North Carolina play. And Luke May, who looks like he's a rec leaguer, dropping 30 and 15 against him. Right. Like, you want to see it. And it changed the dynamic of that game. But I'm just telling you, like, this is a there's a flawed roster composition to begin with in that they only had three guys that can score. Now you only have two guys that can score, and only one of them can really shoot. Like, they got no shot, less than no shot, to win a national title this year in college basketball if Zion Williamson doesn't come back
to play.
Okay,
let's get back to Zion, the expected top pick in next year's NBA draft. He's going to get reevaluated today. We certainly don't know the severity of this injury, but regardless of that, do you believe that Zion should shut it down for the rest of the season?
I want to know more about the severity. You know, I got to hear more. And if I'm him and his family, I'm also getting a second opinion. You know, I think you should. I mean, we know how important this kid is in his future. Get a second opinion. If it's just a mild sprain, it's not going to hinder him. It's not going to slow him down at all. I'm fine with him playing. But if he wants to shut it down, if it's remotely serious and hinders him in any way, and if it's you can go play, you're not going to further injure it, but it's still bothering him a little, I would sit.
I just don't know when we've gotten to this place of shut it down because you could get hurt.
He got hurt.
I understand.
Because then you're right. He could have sat out last night if it's just you could get hurt.
Yeah,
but he got hurt.
I understand, and I'm with you. And I do think that I know there's some belief, whether it's in some parts of the media or maybe in fandom, that Mike Krzyzewski simply wants to win another national title. He's going to play him whether he's healthy or not. I don't think that's the reality of it. The reality of it is they're going to get the best medical treatment possible, and they will get a second opinion. And by the way, no one ever gets a second opinion on good news. You ever notice that? No one goes like, hey, Mr. Gottlieb, you don't have cancer. Sorry, doc, I'm going to have to get a second opinion.
But that's the question, though. That's the question. A doctor may say you're fine, sit 2 to 3 weeks, and where that may be the situation that you want to get a second opinion.
I don't know when we've gotten to this. I understand there's a portion of people that somehow think these kids are just used and abused and spit out. Like, look, Zion has benefited. It's been mutual benefit, has benefited from going to Duke. He was a YouTube sensation. But if you ask any scout, they're like, last year, like, he was a little thick. He didn't necessarily play that hard. He didn't move that well. I don't know how well he shot. And then the second you play for Mike Krzyzewski, it's like you're a member of Skulls. Remember that movie Skulls, where it's like a member of a secret society? In addition to which, he's fixed
his... You don't think he would have benefited going wherever he had gone?
No.
His stock wouldn't have risen the way it has?
Possibly. I don't know. I do know that going to play for Duke, one, you're playing around a couple of other young stars, and I think he's better in this role. I think it's the best role for him. Instead of just giving him the ball and having him make a play, I think this is a role. Mike Krzyzewski's gotten him to play hard. Mike Krzyzewski's gotten him to be in shape. He's bought into the idea of Duke and playing hard at the defensive end. Like last year, Coach K threw up his hands and said, like, I can't get Marvin Bagley to play defense. Let's just play zone. It's like, so he's bought in, and it's, I think, really helped his stock because
it's definitely helped his stock. Because there were a lot of people that thought he was overrated, overhyped coming in. That said, I think he would have benefited anywhere. I mean, with his talent, he may have done even more elsewhere if they had given him the ball or, you know, just played somewhere else. So, Nick Bosa did it in football, you know, and it's not just fans and media, as you mentioned. Scottie Pippen said a month ago, and I know Pippen's made some statements, but Scottie, it doesn't mean everything that comes out of his mouth is going to be crazy. Yeah, he said a month ago he should shut it down. Marcellus Wiley, another pro.
Trae Young
tweeted last night he should shut it down.
Trae Young did shut it down midseason last year. He's the reason that Oklahoma fell off a cliff.
He played.
Look, listen, I don't know how we've gotten to this place where we suddenly think college basketball is a bad thing. It's the
Nobody said it's a bad thing.
Yes.
They just said,
yes.
No, who's saying it's a bad thing?
That's essentially what they say. Well, you don't need I mean, look, Jay Williams is going on ESPN. His whole career has been made based upon what he did at Duke. You should be able to come right out of high school. No, you need time in between high school and the pro.
Not necessarily.
You do.
LeBron James didn't need time.
He's one in a in
But
10
everybody
million.
Doesn't need what? Time. You said it's everybody. It's not everybody. Tracy McGrady, Kobe Bryant, Kevin
Tracy
Garnett.
McGrady never won anything.
He's a Hall of Famer.
He shouldn't be because he never won
he
anything.
He is.
I understand.
And I shouldn't, wouldn't, couldn't.
Listen,
he
listen,
is.
Listen.
A Hall of Famer. And he's a top five player for a good little stretch.
Tracy McGrady never got out of the first round of the playoffs.
You know what he averaged in the playoffs? Was it his fault?
Great.
Let's put a little on Yao Ming. Let's put a little on Jeff Van Gundy, who was his coach.
He also played with the Orlando Magic, and he played with the Toronto
Raptors.
Let's
put it on all of them, because his numbers were astronomical in the playoffs.
I understand. The point is that some of the things that were missing in his game, and people missing in some of their lives, and Dwight Howard and his inability to, one, develop his game, and two, develop as a human being for the greater good, for
Charles
99.
Charles Barkley threw somebody through a window and went to college. Allen Iverson didn't want to practice and went to college. Doug, it's a different individual.
I understand, but education inequality is maybe the biggest problem in our country, right? Is that okay with you? Are you okay with that?
It's a big problem.
It's a huge problem. And the idea that we have so many young, whether it's white, black kids, whatever, that have the opportunity to go play in college, and we make it out to like it's this terrible thing. Look, the kids should come back and play, have a chance, hopefully, to play against Carolina, win the ACC, win an ACC tournament, play for a Final Four. It's your last time to play for something other than just a contract, to play for something other than yourself.
That's what college is about.
You're
not just playing for a contract and
you're
yourself.
Right. You're playing for some sort of legacy of winning a title. That's what you play for. This is about playing for the name on the front of your chest and the guys that you go to school with, the guys that you hang out with, guys that are your contemporaries that are your age.
That was good in the 50s.
We've got 3 hours left to discuss this. We're going to take a quick break coming up. Odell responds. Doug, more people trying to respond to you. Odell Beckham Jr. responds to Doug on Twitter. That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify.
Moving on to Odell Beckham, who we've discussed on the show a bit this week after Jay Glazer made the bold prediction that he'd be dealt this offseason. Doug, you made the point that Odell is about himself and not about winning. Well, that got Twitter fired up. A Giants blogger tweeted that Odell is literally only about winning, to which Odell replied, literally the only thing I care about, winning. Bleep out of here to anybody who don't see or isn't able to comprehend that. One day, everything will all make sense in the end. I promise you, stories unfolding. It's all a part of the journey. Hashtag just wait. Doug, what do you make of what Odell had to say?
Look, if it's all about winning, then what? It's about the hair. It's about the celebrations. It's about peeing on the fire hydrant in the celebration. it's not about playing through injury or was he lightly suspended at the end of the year? Like, if it's about winning, make it about winning. Make it about the team. And Jay Glazer makes very few predictions, if ever. Right? He knows 50 times more than he actually relays. And he's an incredible wellspring of information. He really is. And so Jay Glazer actually kind of doubled down on this yesterday as well. And so when Jay Glazer's talking about it, when other people in the NFL are talking about the viability of trading Odell Beckham Jr., who's just coming into that big new contract, and you're coming off another disappointing season from the Giants, and I'm not laying all the blame on OBJ, not in any way, and I'm not arguing that he has elite top five wide receiver talent. I'm telling you that there's a trend in the National Football League where they want character and culture and guys that get along and guys that are willing to block, guys that are willing to play through injury, maybe even more so than the guys with the top end talent. When you're hearing enough whispers from the NFL, the only possible explanation is Odell Beckham Jr. is about the one-hand catches and about me, instead of about winning games, and that's what the Giants are more focused on.
Well, you heard, like you said, Jay is plugged in, and he may know stuff going on in the locker room, stuff going on between Odell and management that we just don't know about. I would say this, though. This was a bold prediction. And a lot of times when people make bold prediction, you know, you kind of go out there a little further than normal. I don't think that Jay's reporting that Odell is being shopped. Like, you know what I mean? There's a difference between a bold prediction or even saying, like, I think this is going to happen and actually reporting something. So I'll just say that. And when you look at Jay's context, Jay Glazer's in full, he really talked about how a lot of other teams were calling about Odell, trying to trade for him after the trade deadline. So it may be a situation where maybe he thinks the Giants may get an offer they can't refuse. And, you know, they need to build elsewhere and strengthen their teams in other areas. So maybe they get that type of offer. We don't know, but we do know he's not reporting Odell Beckham Jr. is being shopped. The Giants are trying to trade him.
There are defining moments for teammates in a season. And when you're playing the Chicago Bears, remember, the Giants got off to another awful start, and Eli was bad. And their offensive line that they tried to fix.
You're talking about for the season.
Yes. Eli was bad. Their offensive line, they tried to fix it and move Eric Flowers over to right tackle, and that wasn't working. And he was trying to figure some things out. And you're playing the Chicago Bears. It's an onside kick. And the guy who supposedly has the best hands in the National Football League, right? Like, we can argue the route running. We can argue whether or not he high points the ball. Like, he's as good as anybody at all of those things. But he has the best, and he made a business decision.
And that
decision was, I'm more important, my future is more important than what my job is, which is securing the football. So I think there's that ripples through a locker room. Everybody sees that.
I haven't heard a teammate criticize.
Of course not, because
why not?
What?
We've heard teammates criticize Le'Veon Bell,
but
Antonio Brown.
But again, the Giants have done a better job of managing it than what's happened in Pittsburgh.
It's teammates. It wasn't management
Did you notice he didn't play at the end of the season?
Odell gave them plenty of opportunities to criticize him. After their 1-3 start, Odell comes out and questions the heart of his teammates.
Yes.
And what did they do? He's right. We got to play with more energy. Now, maybe he's mistaking, you know, something for a lack of heart, but nobody went at him. That was the perfect opportunity. After the Lil Wayne interview, nobody went at him. After he goes to Miami, nobody went at him in the playoffs. So yeah. I'm just saying, I don't think his teammates view him as a guy that's selfish or doesn't want to win.
Well,
that's important.
But wanting to win and knowing how to go about it.
Just because
his teammates didn't say anything doesn't mean they didn't feel it. Like, look, you got to be very careful, as you know. Like, you guys have both been in pro locker rooms your entire journalistic career. Like, you got to be very careful about calling out anybody's heart, anybody's work ethic. Like, that's.
And he did. That's my point. Guys backed him.
He's 12.
So I don't think look. Literally, all I'm about is winning. Look, we know he's about hanging out, having fun, enjoying the limelight, the spotlight. And there's nothing wrong with that. Deion Sanders enjoyed that type of stuff, and he was a winner. So it's not mutually exclusive. And I got to admit, look, I don't condone not going for the ball in that situation. However, it's week 12. You're out of the playoffs. It's more important for him to be healthy and not get injured than it was to get that ball on that play.
How many years have you been
and
married?
Die for
How many years have you been
23.
Married?
23.
Okay. And so I don't know if your wife has ever broken this one out on you, right? Which is the, hey, actions, not words, right? You can tell me you're all about winning, okay? Actions, not words. That's an action.
You can tell me
we got to play with more heart. Like, hey, bro, a little more heart is go after that football. It's on the ground. How bad
I'm not going to define his career by that one play.
I understand.
Cam Newton in a Super Bowl.
Right. And it was
a Super Bowl.
And it was a defining moment for him.
But he's still the leader of that team.
How's that worked out since then?
No, look, he struggled. But last year, he was playing great. And they were rolling.
No question.
And then
until
the injury gets worse.
But
so
he
still got the locker room behind him.
Yeah, yes, that's a defining moment, though, right? Because when we anybody, when the
that's
going
Super
going good,
Bowl,
but Odell Beckham,
this is week 12 when you're out of the playoffs.
That's all
I'm saying.
I agree. It's far more egregious when you're down 6 points.
I wouldn't have had him out there.
But why? What's the purpose
because
of having
Because he's my star wide receiver. I don't need him maybe getting hurt
but
he's on the kickoff. But he's, I got
he's
other
got
dudes
the
that got hands.
But he's got
especially
the best hands.
Especially with the sticky gloves.
Does he have the best hands in football?
Yes.
Okay.
That doesn't mean he needs to be on my kickoff team.
Yeah. Why not?
Because I don't want him risking injury in that situation.
But his job is to catch the football. And in this case,
as a receiver,
there's literally nobody better out there in a return
very
man.
Few teams are getting onside kicks anyway nowadays. I can put other guys out there that can catch the ball.
Listen, I saw Austin Eckler get a concussion for the exact same play. I understand. Look, it's a risky play.
That's all I'm saying.
But don't play football if you don't want a risky play.
Come on.
Okay?
Come
look,
on. Stop
do you want to win the football game?
Or not?
This
that.
Is, the
it
ball's on the field.
12.
Don't
it
wait.
Didn't matter.
Don't tell me you
coming
want to
up,
win the game.
Has playoff LeBron officially been activated? That's next on First Things First.
I want to win the game.
The NASCAR season heats up Sunday in Atlanta. It's the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, Sunday at 2 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. And it's time for us to go viral. Check this out. 7-year-old Deshaun Flash Morris showcasing. That's some insane footwork.
Wow.
Guys, should he get an invite to next week's combine? Look at that.
7 years old? Is that what you
is
said?
This,
that's incredible.
This video isn't sped up, right? I mean, that's...
Honestly?
That's unbelievable.
Here's my advice.
I bet he's eating popcorn.
Here's my advice. Soccer guy needs to find this kid, get him a soccer ball, and we will soon dominate the world. When our best athletes decide to play soccer...
True.
At 7 years old.
But he looks like a running back to me with that type of footwork.
Oh. He does. No, he looks like whatever
he
wants to
be. He's going
to
be able to do whatever he wants,
true.
Yeah.
Lateral agility is the way to go. Man, that kid's awesome.
That's cool. That's cool. Time for stories to start your morning. Zion suffered a mild knee sprain after blowing out his shoe less than a minute into last night's huge rivalry game against UNC. Duke lost to North Carolina 88-72. He'll be reevaluated today. Doug, does last night show that Duke can't win a title without Zion?
Yes, I do not. I don't think, and if you look back to when he scratched his eye against Florida State, you know, this is just a top-heavy team. They have no bench, no other scoring other than the big three freshmen. I know the air was kind of out of the balloon because he got hurt in the first 30 seconds, and we all felt kind of bummed out by it. But I think last night was on display of this is a fragile team, one that's built around those top three, and he's the most unique weapon we've seen in a long time in college basketball, and they're not going far without him. It also points out just how much torque he puts on his feet, his ankles, his hips, and his knees. And I think that actually would be the biggest cause for concern in drafting him in the NBA is how does his body hold up to the cuts at 285?
Yeah, if I'm an NBA team that drafts him, I'm getting him a nutritionist right away. And you can slim him down a little bit, get rid of some of that baby fat. Remember, Barkley slimmed down. We think of Barkley as this huge fat guy, you know, he slimmed down pretty well. When he was in the NBA. But as far as them winning a championship, they were my favorite with Zion. They're certainly no longer my favorite, but I'm not going to count them out. You still have two guys that could be in the top 10 or top 5 of the NBA draft. I'm going to give you a chance if you
North Carolina scored 65 points in the paint. It's like a layup drill.
To the NFL now, the Steelers won't use the transition tag on Le'Veon Bell after hearing the news. Le'Veon tweeted, "Free at last." Chris, where will L. Bell end up?
I think the Jets is a place he could end up. Indianapolis is certainly in the hunt. I think either of those teams would be great. I'd love to see him in Indianapolis with Andrew Luck. They have some money, so maybe they can get him. But I think the Jets is the team I'd bet on. As much as I like Le'Veon Bell, as much as I think he could help Sam Darnold, not only as a runner, but a catcher out of the backfield, a receiver, I wouldn't give him, he's talking about reportedly $50 million over his first 2 years. There's no way I'm paying a running back in the NFL that much type of money.
Yeah, look at Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley is a perfect example of it where C.J. Anderson yesterday said, and I believe it was on FS1, said that Todd Gurley was more hurt from the attrition of the season. And Todd Gurley is a guy that...
And he's much younger.
He's much younger. Okay, and they tore up that contract a year early, and that's not a good sign. Teams understand, like, you can't put all your money in one running back. The Jets need an offensive line. The Jets need wide receivers. Like, they need everything. Right? It's like one of those things, like, well, do you want to get a new fridge or do I want to get a new big screen? Sure, but I got to get new floors. Right. I got to get new windows.
They may be bidding against themselves, and so they may not have to pay.
I don't think he's making back the $14.5 million that he lost from last year.
Finally, Kyrie Irving seems fed up with all the free agent speculation after this viral video of him and Katie speaking in the tunnel at the All-Star Weekend. Spurred on free agent buzz, Kyrie responded to the craziness. Take a listen to what he said.
A human being talks to another best friend of mine, like, putting, it's just crazy, you know. This is the stuff that just, like, just doesn't make the league fun. Like, it doesn't make the league fun. Nobody helps promote the league even more by doing bull like that. Like, just fictitious putting things on, like, what we're talking about. Like, it's crazy. I guess that's what you want.
Chris, what do you make of Kyrie's comments?
I get the frustration. I mean, obviously, you know, every one of those conversations he had with KD, there was something of him in Miami with KD. He waited on the floor. He was like the last player to wait on the floor while KD was giving his acceptance speech, if you will, for the MVP of the All-Star game. And then what we just saw, they all may have been innocent, innocuous conversations, just two friends. And so I get the frustration of maybe everybody's blowing it out of proportion and all that. I understand that. But what Kyrie has to understand is this is a part of the job. He said it doesn't make the NBA fun. Okay, there's plenty of other things that do make the NBA fun. You benefit greatly from this. And every job has an aspect of it that's not fun. Most people's jobs, or a lot of people's jobs, the whole job may not be fun. So anytime you're in the public eye, athlete, politician, the president of the United States, us, you know, you get criticized when you're in the public eye. And the better you are, the higher you rank, the more you're going to be talked about and criticized. He was interviewed by Rachel Nichols of ESPN, and he said, I get it. This type of media coverage and scrutiny follows the great players, and I'm thankful to be a great player in this league. So he seemed like he got it. I get the frustration. Most people would be frustrated with it. You're psychoanalyzed, and all the speculation may completely be wrong, but it comes with the territory. You're compensated tremendously. You get so many fringe benefits from your job. So when he talked to LeBron and he apologized for, you know, being that young guy that didn't understand things, he should have asked LeBron how you handled the media, because obviously LeBron gets more scrutinized than any player. And LeBron, look, all the years, his last year in Cleveland, his last year in Miami, his last year in Cleveland again, he's never let it get out of control. And obviously everybody was speculating, but he's always somehow been able to just not let it ruin that season for his team or himself. And Kyrie has to kind of learn, and so does Kevin Durant, has to kind of learn how to do that.
You know where the best place for both these guys to go is? New York. I mean, there's no troublesome media there. Nobody shakes you down for
a
story. People don't follow you around. It's a good place to just kind of hide out and get away. That's how the New York media treats you with such respect that they'll absolutely give him his privacy. I'm with you on, I actually understand it feels like an invasion of privacy. Right. And I think what you're hearing from Kyrie and KD is consistent that, hey, I'm actually okay if you criticize me in basketball. I'm actually okay with that. But, like, I can't even have a conversation with my boy. Like, we can be talking about a million things. Like, some video of me having a discussion with a guy in a hallway suddenly becomes, like, that's us deciding where we're going to play next year.
Right.
Now, look, the smarter decision, you ever seen the movie Clear and Present Danger?
Yes.
Okay, so
Harrison Ford.
Right, remember?
I'm with you. I'm
with
you.
Awesome. Okay, you're with me here.
I don't remember.
I
don't really.
Okay, I was like 5 years old.
Okay, so I'll give you the kind of Reader's Digest version of it. Okay, so a friend of the president, longtime friend of the president, apparently was laundering money for drug lords, right, in South America. And so he's killed on his yacht. So the president's sitting around with all of his henchmen, and they're saying, well, what should we do about this? And all the guys are advising him, like, you guys barely knew each other. You weren't really friends. And Harrison Ford's like, no. Don't say you were friends. Say you were lifelong friends. Because the second you say there's nothing to it, that we're not that close, the media is like, wait a second, you guys grew up together. There's photos of you.
Right.
He could have, had he just said, like, man, we were just talking about what we did for dinner the night before. Like, had he acted like it was no big deal and not been defensive, it would have gone away. But instead, now you're like, wait a second, there's something to it. They must have been plotting. They must have been talking about which media members do you want to plant stories in. It only feeds the media frenzy more so than marginalize it.
And both of them are so headstrong, which is a good thing, but they don't want to give the media that. They don't want to give, like, they don't want to let you know what they were talking about because they feel like, why do I have to let you know what I'm talking about? It just comes with the territory. And look, Kyrie could have, when he came out in the preseason and said, I want to stay in Boston if you'll have me, that kind of put things to rest.
Had he said
then
it again?
Then you come out and say, ask me July 1st. That's his right. It's his right to change his mind. It's his right. I don't, like you said before, they probably don't know what they're going to do. So it's their right to just be like, look, ask me July 1st. It doesn't need to be talked about now. But you have to understand there's tons of money riding on you. People are really interested in what you do as a player. It's a great compliment, but you just have to be able to deal with it.
I do think we should put into context, this is, as we know, in practice sessions, you're in a scrum. I mean, this is a short snippet of they just came back from All-Star break, they're practicing. That was one piece of what was likely 7 to 10 minutes of him sitting there talking, answering questions. So not just always one answer. We're going to move on to the Lakers as they kick off their post-All-Star push tonight against the Rockets. They are currently 3 games out of the playoff picture, and if they are going to make the postseason, LeBron knows he's going to have to ramp it up.
Well, it's going to be a little bit different, you know, for me now, just knowing the position that we're in. You know, for me personally, I haven't been in this position in a while, and because of my injury, it's kind of, you know, hit our team, you know, and I didn't. Obviously, we would love to have the success where I was out, but we didn't, and this is where we is right now. So, you know, I'm going to be a little bit different, a little bit earlier than I would like to be in previous years. My level of intensity has to be, unfortunately for me, because I don't like to do it at such an early time, I'm a little bit different. But it's been activated, so look forward to seeing what we can do.
It's been activated.
Twin powers activate.
Chris, can LeBron carry the Lakers into the postseason?
I loved what LeBron said. And he does have that next level. I mean, obviously he's, 27-8-7 or something like that, kind of coasting. And I have no problem with him coasting in the regular season. He's still playing very well. And at his age, with his wear and tear, he knows what he needs to do to be ready for the postseason. We saw it last year when they were the 4th seed and people thought maybe they don't get out of the East, and he turns it on and they do. We saw it the year before, you know, with Toronto and Boston even then. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. I think this will tell us, you know, there are people now that doubt, is he still the best player in the world? I think this last run will tell us, yeah, he's still that guy. And I am confident he can get them in the playoffs. I like this attitude from LeBron because when you've competed, look, for him it's been championship or bust since at least 2007, you know, when he first got to the finals with the Cavaliers. That's the last 11 years of his career, 11, 12 years of his career. When it is really not championship or bust, and now it's just, let's just get to the playoffs, it can be hard to get motivated to do that, especially when very likely Golden State is waiting for you at the end of the tunnel, you know? So to hear LeBron talk about this, like, it's definitely important for us to make the playoffs. I like it, and I think he'll get them in.
I think he'll get them in, but I think it's, you know, the margin for error is really slight. They have the 4th toughest schedule in the West. There's a window here. Early on in the last part of the season, where they play the Pelicans, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans, and then I think they play Phoenix like a game after that, right? Those are the ones you have to win. Like, the troubling part wasn't even losing to the 76ers because they stole one in Boston. It was, how are you going to lose to the Hawks when they're seemingly trying to lose games, right? Like, how possibly could you do that? So, I personally think they're going to get there. I thought that the start of the year, you know, early on in the season when they got through a slow start, it's because they were figuring out how to play with LeBron. When they figured it out, remember, there's a time they're 17-10 and they're humming along. Then Rondo gets hurt and he gets hurt and Kuzma was hurt for a couple games and Lonzo's hurt. Assuming Lonzo Ball gets back and gets healthy and nobody else gets hurt, this is a top 4, not top 8 team in the West, regardless of their schedule. And I'm with you. I don't believe he's still the best player in the NBA, but I do believe he still has the ability to go back to the well and bring out those superpowers. He's still an unbelievable player, but I'm wondering whether it's not there was an old video game, RC Kart. You guys ever play RC Kart? And you'd hit the nitrous, and that's when you would take off, right? But at some point, or like turbo, like a turbo in Madden, right? When you have the turbo button, if you hold it down too much, you don't have any more turbo left. Right. I do wonder, is there going to be a time when he tries to go to the well or hit that turbo button and there's nothing there? It's like, yeah, now I'm going to start playing hard. Like, yeah, but now you're 34.
Right.
It's just different. I'm fascinated to see, but I think they get there.
Will his approach help some of the younger? Everyone's trying to acclimate themselves to one another. Some of these younger players trying to figure out their role, how they fit with LeBron on the floor. Will his mindset and approach now, as he brings it back to this group, help some of the younger players understand exactly what they need to do on the floor?
I think it will, because this is a learning experience for all of these guys. And we know that even if they get to the playoffs and get swept by Golden State, it's still good for these young guys to go through this. You have to learn how to win. You have to learn what it's like to play in these must-win situations. And really, these last 25 games, we could argue, are like the playoffs for them. So they're going to see him ratcheted up. I think this will be a great learning experience for these guys, because we're all assuming that they're going to be gone. Maybe not. If they don't get Anthony Davis, then this is going to be your team. You make some additions, but Kuzma, Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, and all these guys, they may be who you're playing with the next couple of years if you're LeBron James, if you don't get that huge trade.
I believe that that huge trade that was proposed on Twitter was really being leaked from the New Orleans Pelicans, that they weren't throwing in all of those guys, because right. they do actually value these
it
young
was
players.
Your pick, you can get a few of these
guys. Right, you can get a few of these guys. You can't have all of them. That's because they actually think, like, Kyle Kuzma's a borderline all-star. They think Lonzo Ball still has a chance to be special. Maybe not an elite number two draft pick, but he's great defensively. He's the best advanced passer in the NBA, and he's a Swiss Army knife in that he can probably guard four positions, and the way you play in basketball, that's invaluable. So I think they want to see it, but there's two different NBAs, right? The NBA of all these other teams that don't matter, and guys are periodically playing hard and dialing up in the fourth quarter, and then there's the real games. And I still think LeBron wants to see how these guys play. And the front office wants to see, all right, like Kyle Kuzma, we know you can put up 25 and 30 in one of those other games, but can you put it up tonight against the Houston Rockets? Can you guard your position? Can you switch off on a James Harden and not foul and keep him away from his left hand and make him take contested shots? I think this is a great litmus test for these young players, as well as for LeBron James. How does his body react when he can't take a day off, when he can't dial it back because the team's not good enough for him to mail it in for a game or two? They need to win as many as possible.
I also think Rajon Rondo is going to be an integral part of no helping question. Them get it together.
He's missed over 30 games, yep. 34 games,
yeah.
I believe.
But just the understanding
brought up a good point.
Of what it takes.
People are making it, they're not making the playoffs. You're not looking at the context. LeBron's injury, Rondo's injury, Ingram, Kuzma, Lonzo. And I mean, they haven't, and the roster makeup doesn't really fit that well.
Activated. Coming up, who is to blame for all of the Steelers' struggles? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First, and we welcome in Super Bowl champ Plaxico Burress. Thanks for being here, Flax.
Thanks for having me. How's everybody doing this morning?
We're doing well. You at least can relate to Doug's comments about the video games, right?
Absolutely.
You were on top of it.
I screwed it up.
Yeah, it's actually RC Pro-Am. It's not RC Kart, but it's okay.
I was dominant in Double Dribble, Blades of Steel. Double Dribble, yeah. Blades of Steel was my jam.
I was pretty good in television
Nintendo.
Back in the day.
Spades. That's what we're going to get to. We need Plaxico here for that. Let's get to the team that you spent six seasons with, the Pittsburgh Steelers. There's a huge transition coming in the Steel City. Pittsburgh is working on a trade for Antonio Brown. Also, they declared they won't use a transition tag on Le'Veon Bell, making the running back a free agent. And on top of that, GM Kevin Colbert said of criticism of Ben Roethlisberger, they should listen to him. Plaxico, what do you make of what's going on with your former team?
You know what? Pittsburgh just can't seem to stay out of the news these days. When I was in Pittsburgh, all these things didn't get out. But I don't think you can really just put it on one person. I think it's a culmination of things. Antonio not winning, not making the playoffs and things like that. But I think there's some things going on, with him in the organization between him, Ben, and some different players that those things are not going to get out. They're not going to talk about it. We really don't know what those things are. So all we can really do is just, you know, try to figure out and speculate. But I don't think you can really put it on one person. I really don't think you can. I think I think that course has run its time between, you know, Antonio and the organization. He wants to win. Everybody wants to win. But we don't make the playoffs, and the expectations in Pittsburgh are so high. and you don't get to where you want to get, I think everybody's just a little frustrated.
You know, it's interesting because Big Ben, there's been like two Big Bens. The early Big Ben had the issues off the field and then the motorcycle accident as well that so many people have forgotten about. Right. Then there's the now Big Ben, which is does he want to retire? Does he want to come back? This was weird yesterday for Kevin Colbert to come out and go like, when somebody asked him about his comments on his radio show, no, he shouldn't stop making them. You guys should listen to him. Right. They went all in on Big Ben as a guy who played there. Granted, different Big Ben back then. What do you take from that?
You know, having played with him and having a personal relationship with him, you know, he's not that kind of player that's going to, you know, get up in front of the camera and in the media and really, you know, put his players down. You know, every interaction that I've had with Ben, you know, playing with him, he came in as a rookie. I was in my fifth year. And our dialogue was, hey, you know what? Don't get discouraged. We had just lost week two to Baltimore Ravens. Tommy Mattis had went down with the elbow. Say, hey, don't get discouraged. You get open, I'm going to find you the ball. We're going to work hard. We're going to get better together. But at the same time, like, the communication was different because we had veterans like, you know, Alan Faneca, Jerome Bettis, you know, Jason Guild, and guys of that nature who, you know, they got the ultimate respect. That's kind of been lost with the new
right.
NFL and the CBA and not allowing these older guys and veterans to really, you know, be the captain of that locker room or the ship. But they just have to figure out a way to get it fixed because, you know, this is not the Pittsburgh that everybody's used to seeing.
So it seems like there's been a change in Big Ben because, like you said, back then he wasn't really calling guys out like that. Now he's got his radio show and, he's called out Antonio and his route run and things like that. And from what I've been told, and also Antonio just tweeted it, that he feels like there's not that mutual respect. Right. And clearly Ben respects his game because, right. you know, you've heard him talk about how great Antonio is. But if he feels like you're not respecting me as a person, you're calling me out in public, right. we're not talking about it one-on-one, is that fall on Ben? Like, is Ben the because I've said if Ben calls Antonio and they sit down man-to-man, and I'm not putting it all on Ben, Antonio has to be willing to sit down man-to-man too, right. and you air out your grievances, maybe this could work out.
You know, maybe they have had a conversation on the phone and maybe, you know, Antonio handled it the wrong way by putting it out on Twitter or the media. But I don't see how the best duo in football can't get it fixed. Why can't they have the respect for one another to really, you know, pick up the phone and have this conversation? Hey, man, let's figure out a way to get this fixed. We have a Super Bowl caliber football team. You know, we're the best duo in football. Let's get this thing fixed. And for some strange reason, they just haven't been able to do that. You know, you're talking about two basically Hall of Fame players that can't coexist together. It's just something that you haven't seen
before. And maybe we've also forgotten the Le'Veon thing also threw this thing awry. And then but the way the Le'Veon thing went down, where the entire offensive line, I'd never seen this before, right. turns on Le'Veon yeah. in yeah, a contract yeah. dispute. That never happened. Yeah. Guys always protect their guys because everybody wants everybody to get paid, right? That's the players against management. Doesn't that signal that there was something amiss when you see something we've never seen before in the NFL?
Yeah, I was kind of shocked by that, you know, myself, because being a player and being in a locker room, we kind of have this code of, you know, let everybody handle their business on the side, and we come together as men and play football and, you know, and try to have success and go out and win championships. But when you have your own players, you know, coming out and kind of putting you down in the media, it kind of hurts a little bit because you're going out there also every weekend, every Sunday, you know, fighting to win a football game. But when your offensive line and guys that are blocking for you are not, you know, supporting you, then those kind of things hurt as a player.
Plexico, there's been talk about Mike Tomlin not being enough of a disciplinarian. James Harrison has come out and said on the air many times he needs to be harder on guys. You know, what do you think about that situation?
You have to play within the Pittsburgh Steelers organization to really understand what that locker room is all about and what that group is all about. It pretty much governs itself. Because they put the onus on the players, hey, you know, you guys are grown men, you know, conduct yourself that way, come to work, be professional. The standard is the standard. Let's go out and win football games and play Pittsburgh Steelers football. So I understand what that locker room is all about. It's unlike any place that I've ever been as far as, you know, playing in an organization and playing on other teams. But that locker room is a special place. I've said on several accounts that, you know, guys like myself, and you look at how many guys left, and you go somewhere else, and you're like, man, wow. You know, it's really like a special place, and you end up going back. And, you know, I hope that Antonio doesn't put himself in a situation to where he goes somewhere and it's all, like, strictly just business. And you're like, man, I really left a special place.
Lexico, thanks for being here. We're going to see you a little bit later in the show. Coming up, should the Cowboys make Dak Prescott the highest-paid player in NFL history? That is next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, and we are going viral. Zion Williamson suffered a mild knee sprain after blowing his shoe less than a minute into last night's game against North Carolina. But before the game, he was all smiles with Todd Gurley, visiting with Coach K and the freshman phenom. That's nice.
Gurley's like, I could use you blocking me up front.
Can you imagine him in a foot helmet and shoulder pads?
No. I could not.
Tight end.
Like, this is like people.
And the quickness, the explosiveness, the agility.
Well, it's like that. People have said that about LeBron James, who was a good football player in high school. Like,
he
wouldn't be good at football. You're right. He'd be great at football. No, he doesn't want to go over the middle. You know who wants to go over the middle? No one. No one wakes up in the morning, even NFL players, and goes, I can't wait to get ear holed today. Right? So the idea that LeBron would suddenly be scared of contact.
He'd have been a tremendous receiver or tight end in the NFL.
More tight end, kind of stiff in the hips.
Because, I mean, Ohio's a football state.
Yes.
And he was all state as a junior or a sophomore.
You know, well, so the difference, though, is I do think that Zion's looser in the hips than LeBron is in the hips. Like, he moves really well laterally. Now, some of it is how LeBron built his body once he got to the NBA. But they'd both be freaks on the football field.
Without a doubt. All right, moving on to the Cowboys, who have a big decision to make this offseason, whether or not to pay Dak Prescott big quarterback money. The Athletic called this the largest contract quandary in Cowboys history. Chris, should the Cowboys pay Dak Prescott whatever it takes?
No, because what the Cowboys have to do, here's what I would do if I'm them. I would offer him a contract now in the range of $20 to $22 million annually, okay, which is below what they're paying the top quarterbacks, obviously. If he's ready to sign it, great, I lock him up. I can't go past whatever that number is. I'm assuming it's something like 22. I can't go past the number that if I go over it, I can't bring back Ezekiel Elliott or Amari Cooper or some of the other guys. Because Dak Prescott is not the type of quarterback that can carry a team by himself. I'm not saying he has to have everything perfect around him, but he needs other guys. And so if it's going to – he's not Aaron Rodgers where he's just going to carry me. So, and I think he needs to realize that. If I'm Dak, I would rather be in Dallas where I can win and I can keep all my guys around me that help us win than to go elsewhere for the absolute top dollar and we're 6-10 every year and I become irrelevant. And so now, if he wants more, if he's not willing to play for that, then I let him play this year. And if he leads us to the NFC title game or the Super Bowl, then I'm willing to pay him more money. But I haven't seen enough yet to make me just going to open up the vault and tell him take whatever he wants.
I agree with you on almost every front. There's a couple other parts to it, right? Remember, Zeke gets suspended last year. That's why they don't make the playoffs, right? It wasn't – Dak was still there.
Right.
And look, there's other flaws. Their play calling has been rudimentary. But you have to ask yourself, was their play calling rudimentary because that's the play calling? Or was it rudimentary because they felt like there's a limit to what Dak Prescott can do? And I would say probably a little bit of both. And I actually feel for Dak Prescott because he's being paid at a rate commensurate with that of a fourth-round pick when he's been the starting quarterback and he's watching everybody else make – you know, their rookie deals dwarf his in comparison. So he's like, look, you should be paying me for what I've been giving you over the first 3 years of my career. So I'm with you. But like, there's some other stuff. Amari Cooper's deal spikes to $14 million. That's the reason the Raiders got rid of him. Wasn't they didn't like him. They just weren't sure he was worth the $14 million. And then you're going to have to extend him. Yep. So there's going to be some creativity they're going to have to take there. And I think the big discussion is you got to go to Dak and whether or not you say he's a top-end quarterback or not, because guys don't want to hear that. And he was kind of feeling himself going back 2 weeks ago. You know, they asked him about would he take a Tom Brady discount? And he's like, hey, he's not even the primary breadwinner. Not everybody has that. He was feeling himself a little bit there. And so many other quarterbacks have been overpaid simply because they're the next guy to be paid. I think there has to be an honest conversation there where you don't have to call out his top-end potential. You just go like, look, We want you to be the face of our franchise for the next 10 years, not the next three. And the best way to do that is to manage this cap. Look at the top paid quarterbacks and look at the fact that most of them didn't make the playoffs. We got to put a team around you so we can elongate your career. And if he takes that bait in negotiation, sure. But I'm with you. I'm 20 to 22. If I can get him for less than that, you know, maybe you got to lop in different parts of the signing bonus and different roster bonuses, and you're on the hook for 3 years when you really only want to be on the hook for 2 years. But here's the thing about the Dallas Cowboys. They have leverage if they want to use it. He could play under his rookie deal for one more year, and then they could franchise tag him. If he doesn't like that, they could franchise tag him again. He's theirs for at least three more years, if not 4 years.
Yeah, they don't have to. You're right.
They don't have to because the third year of the franchise tag is the quarterback rate, which, by the way, he's a quarterback. So he's kind of screwed in this deal. So I think there's a smart negotiation. And remember, the franchise tag does hurt you because dollar for dollar counts against the cap. But the smart negotiation is don't go to him and go like, hey, man, you're not really a top five quarterback.
Right.
Go to him and say, this is the best thing for all of us to win. Let's find a way to sprinkle the money around. You're going to get paid more money than you ever thought possible. You'll be the quarterback of the Cowboys. Meanwhile, if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, I'm not even sure he's my franchise quarterback for the long term. I got to protect myself against a three-year deal if I can stay away
from it. What did he show you last year? Because he has that great rookie year. He dips in his second year. How much trust do you have in the quarterback that he can consistently be?
As long as I have good talent around him, I've got great trust. I think he has all the intangibles. I think he's a winner. I think he's a leader of men. I think he is a glorified game manager. I say he's a game manager who can make plays, not only with his arm occasionally when necessary, but with his legs too. So, you know, I'm not calling him Mark Sanchez. He's much better than that because he can really make the big plays when he needs to. But we saw it last year. You mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. They were struggling until they got Amari Cooper. You know, you saw the difference that made. So I like everything he brings to the table, but he's not the guy that's going to carry your team. I think the challenge for him and his agent will be this. We've seen Derek Carr took a lesser deal so they could keep some of the players around him. And then when Khalil Mack, one of his best friends on the team, is up, they don't, you know, they want to let him go. They let Amari Cooper go. You know, Tom Brady has taken lesser deals. Have they been willing to spend a ton of money? Obviously, it's worked out for him, but they haven't, like, broken the bank with other guys with that money they saved. So I don't want to see that. I'm really looking at it like, look, I want what's best for Dallas. If I'm Dak, if we're going to keep Ezekiel, Amari, these other guys around me, then I'm willing to take less. But if you're just trying to lowball me and you're not going to use that extra money to keep these guys around me, then I'm upset and we're not dealing in good faith.
Well, it's important to remember that in the National Football League, when GMs don't spend money on you, they can't put it in their pocket, right? There's not just a ceiling, there's a floor.
Right.
There was about 10 years ago, they had a cap-free year. And all the players were like, man, we're getting paid. And guess what happened? They all got lowballed because there was no floor. And so especially the rank and file guys, the offensive linemen, the backups, they got lowballed, lowball city. So if they save money on Dak, they're going to spread around. Look,
maybe.
He had two games.
There's a difference between the floor and the ceiling, though. Just because they had the floor doesn't mean they're spending that extra money.
They have to spend it before the year.
Before the year
is up. It's a lot of money. And they're the Dallas Cowboys. They want to win before Jerry goes to that football field in the sky, right? I mean, that's an important thing. So I just, like, look, I don't think he's great. He's just not. He's not very accurate. When he reloads and people want them to run some sophisticated offense, he's not a sophisticated quarterback.
But do you think you can win big with him?
I think you win with him. Do I think he's the Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network? He uses an NFL saying that's just great. You're either a tractor or a trailer, right? A tractor is one that pulls the team along, right? That's Russell Wilson. That's Aaron Rodgers. That's Tom Brady. That's Drew Brees. A trailer is one who's kind of along for the ride. He's a little bit more along for the ride. He does have the intangibles,
right?
But let's not undersell the tangibles. He's not accurate. He's especially not accurate when he reloads. He failed to get the most out of Dez Bryant. And I'll be the first one to say that Dez Bryant was not a great route runner. Dez Bryant had some issues with catching footballs, but he also never really understood how you have to throw the ball up to Dez and make him compete. He didn't get the most out of him that he could. Now, You know, Witten retires, Dez is gone, they didn't have a great plan. I understand that was one reason his production wasn't as good early in the year, but I don't think anybody who honestly looks at Dak Prescott thinks this is one of the best throwers of the football.
No,
He has the intangibles, but the tangibles are missing. You got to manage that for the Dallas Cowboys.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.